Hey everyone, this is Matt. Before we go into episode 3, I just want to remind everyone that when my sister and I first started recording our conversations about Hannibal, we didn't quite have our sound setups in great shape. So we had a few sound problems, and they're most noticeable in this episode. So you're going to hear a little bit of noise. At about the 46-minute mark, there's going to be about a minute of echoing. I couldn't really fix it, but in subsequent episodes, we got our recording setups in much better shape, so that's not going to be happening too much after episode 3. But I just wanted to let you know that in advance. If you hear a little bit of noise, if you hear that echoing, it's us, not you. Okay, with that out of the way, let's listen to episode 3. All right, so we're talking about episode 3, Potage. And this is our instant reaction, so we're going to do a quick recap. Episode 3, Potage, deals with basically the aftermath of Abigail Hobbs waking up and the actions that everybody takes related to that. So she wakes up at the beginning, and everyone wants to spring into action. Jack Crawford's convinced that she was an accomplice of Garrett Jacob Hobbs, so he really wants Will to visit her in the hospital just to see if Will senses anything interesting. Alana thinks it's a bad idea, but Hannibal clearly wants to start stirring the pot, or stirring the potage. So he kind of sides with Jack, and so Hannibal and Will wind up going to visit Abigail. When they get to the hospital, Abigail's actually been talking to Freddie Lowndes. Freddie kind of did one of her devious things to get in there and talk to her, and Freddie, who doesn't really care about Abigail's mental health, has told Abigail that Garrett Jacob Hobbs was the Shrike. And also tells her that Will Graham, who's going to come question her, is mentally ill and not a good person for her to be talking to. And Hannibal and Will arrive and walk in on this going on and kick Freddie out. And then Hannibal and Will have a conversation with Abigail. And during the course of that conversation, Will is kind of telling her how horrible it was for him to kill Garrett Jacob Hobbs. Hannibal detects a kind of extra little bit of fascination from Abigail about the act of killing. And you can see the wheels are turning with Hannibal. Later on, Will confronts Freddie Lowndes, who kind of tries to give a fake apology to him. And Will actually threatens her. And Jack is really pissed about Will threatening her. But he doesn't really care that much. So now Jack Crawford is so hell-bent on figuring out if Abigail is an accomplice that he wants all of them, the whole Hannibal gang, and Abigail to go to Abigail and Garrett Jacob Hobbs's house and revisit the scene of the crime. Alana really doesn't think this is a good idea, which seems pretty reasonable, yes. But Hannibal kind of manipulatively finds a way to overrule it, and they all wind up going to the house with her. And by the way, just as an aside, I thought this was just, I just sort of felt like any woman who's felt not listened to in the workplace is really going to be empathizing with Alana in this situation, right?
Yeah, she's just completely, she's silenced. Her opinion is meaningless. I've been in a lot of meetings like that.
And not only that, she's as right can be, right? Like, she's the only one who actually has the well-being of the patient in mind, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Will wants the best for Abigail, but Will is sort of being, there's a lot of push-pull going on with him externally. I mean, Hannibal already has a lot of influence over him, and Jack has influence over him, so I don't think Alana stood a chance against the two of them in terms of how Will was going to be influenced.
Right, right. So they all go to the Hobbs house, and Hannibal is kind of hungrily observing that Abigail really seems fascinated with Will's empathy disorder process. And clearly Hannibal sees that Abigail can sort of tilt either way, you know, toward either being really fascinated with the macabre, or maybe she could just be, they could try to help her, but obviously Hannibal's not really interested in that. Abigail has a friend comes to visit her, a friend who looks a lot like Abigail. Like, the minute she walks in, you're like, oh, this would have been a victim sooner or later, named Marissa. And
it's just that it's later, not sooner.
Yeah, exactly. I know, it's one of those moments where you're just like, oh boy, this is not going to work out well for this person. So Marissa comes over to visit, and Marissa's mother really isn't happy that she's visiting. But while she's visiting, this guy named Nicholas Boyle, who is the brother of the copycat victim that we all know Hannibal killed, comes to confront her. And Marissa's like, get the fuck out of here, and throws a rock at his head, and the rock draws some blood. And after everybody chases him off the property, you see Hannibal sneakily hides the rock with blood on it, and you don't really know why he's doing it, but you know he's doing it for a reason. Later, they all go to the cabin with Abigail, and the whole gang goes to the cabin. After poking around the cabin for a little while and having some intense conversations, blood starts dripping from the ceiling, and they go upstairs to the attic, or kind of loft area. And in the cabin where all the antlers are, Marissa is there hooked on some antlers and bleeding. And it's really, you know, exactly like the copycat murder. Hannibal kind of tries to imply that the brother, Nicholas, was the one who did the copycat killing and did this killing. It's hard to say if everyone's really convinced of that or not, but you can see he's trying to push things into that direction. Later, Abigail is in her house, and everyone's kind of poking around, and Nicholas has snuck into the house and confronts her. And she starts provoking him with her responses, and he gets really upset and kind of pushes her against the wall, and she grabs a hunting knife. Oh, sorry. Before that happens, there's a really gross thing. They had had a conversation earlier on where it became clear to Abigail that Garrett Jacob Hobbs was feeding his victims to Abigail and her mother. And that's a really disgusting revelation for her. And it's pretty clear that that was the case. When she goes back to the house, she starts looking at all these kind of homemade things that Garrett Jacob Hobbs had made out of deer skin, like pillows and all sorts of stuff. And she takes a pillow and she rips it open, and she sees that it's stuffed with human hair. And it's really, really like a gross and scary moment. So she sort of does that. And then Nicholas confronts her. She's still holding a knife that she had used to rip the pillow open, and Nicholas confronts her, and she stabs him. And not just stabs him, but she really stabs him like a pro and guts him, because we had seen in an earlier flashback that Garrett Jacob Hobbs had taught her how to gut a deer properly, and she really knows how to use a knife, and she stabs him. Now, Hannibal shows up, and before Alana's aware that something weird's going on in the house, and rather than let Alana see what's happening, Hannibal grabs her from behind and knocks her unconscious by banging her head against the wall, and then finds Abigail and convinces Abigail that there's no way that a murder like this, or that there's no way that she'll be, that anyone will believe that she did this in self-defense, because the way she killed him was so aggressive. And he offers to help her hide the body. So he helps her hide the body. And when Alana recovers, she says she doesn't know what happened, but everyone really just assumes that it was this guy Nicholas that did it. And even though Nicholas is dead and now hidden, everyone's going to assume that that's what happened. And finally, toward the end of the episode, Abigail, who seems to have snuck out of the mental hospital where she was staying and has come to visit Hannibal, and she shows up in Hannibal's office, and Hannibal semi-admits to her that he is the copycat serial killer who made the call to Garrett Jacob Hobbs. Without saying so in so many words, he does make it clear to Abigail that Abigail is right. And he also makes it clear to her that they're kindred spirits, and that Hannibal sort of clearly wants to cultivate this killing instinct that Garrett Jacob Hobbs had started to cultivate in Abigail. And at the end, they kind of have this, it's clear that they have this alliance, and they say something to the effect of, we're going to keep each other's secrets. And that's the end of the episode. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. Did you enjoy the episode?
I did enjoy the episode. I thought that it was a very dense episode. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of conversation. There are a lot of decisions get made. And what I really like, what I liked a lot about the episode is the first two episodes made you think that we were going to have a murder of the week show, and that the interpersonal dynamics were going to kind of orbit around the murder of the week. This is the third episode, and it comes right out of the gate. It's only about the interpersonal dynamics. And the fact that there's a murder in the episode almost doesn't matter. And there's violence in the episode, and that doesn't matter so much because the violence is all an expression of the interpersonal dynamics. This kind of debate among the Hannibal gang, Jack Crawford and Alana and Will, over what direction Abigail is going to go, what's the best way to treat her, and all their ulterior motives in how they want to approach her and deal with her are really, really subtly and, I thought, realistically depicted. Like, they are all having conversations that just sound like normal conversations, especially Hannibal, yet they are all really grappling for Abigail's soul, as well as grappling for Will's soul as well. And Hannibal really sees a kindred spirit, and Abigail sees her as kind of a lever to pry loose Will's violent instincts. And Alana, who sort of seems to be now the conscience of the group, is losing out to all of them. And a lot of the fuel behind it all is Jack's compulsion to try to prove that Abigail was an accomplice. So all those kind of dynamics are really well portrayed, I thought, in this episode. And it's just very much not a murder of the week episode.
Yeah, that's sort of the one of the main things that struck me as well. I mean, we have two murders in this episode, but the murders are committed by people on the inside rather than people on the outside. They're people who are going to be with us for a long time. And the murders sort of reflect things that are going on between the characters and within the characters. So yeah, it's a very different episode in that way from what we've seen before.
The murders are a form of argument.
Yes, yes. Or a form of asserting one's position or jockeying for position.
Another thing I liked about the episode was that the show sort of starts to open up a little bit. It declares that the series is not just going to be about Hannibal and Will. You've got scenes of Hannibal interacting with other characters without Will there. And you even got scenes of Hannibal interacting with other characters where he's not even talking about Will, which is, in the first couple of episodes, everyone was just seemed to have nothing better to do than talk about Will. In this episode, Hannibal's got a relationship with Abigail now that just exists outside of his relationship with Will. It's motivated by his relationship with Will, but it's a whole separate dynamic that we see emerging. So I sort of like that about the show too, about this episode too, is that it's showing that the show is going to kind of open in a lot of different directions and can deal with other relationships besides what we thought was just the central one.
Yes. I mean, you're definitely seeing more development of all of the characters. I mean, save for Alana, I guess I would say at this point, there's less development of her as a real character, as opposed to using her as kind of a moral compass. You know, as a character, she's not been that well served yet, really. She does develop a lot more as the series continues. But at this point, she's just sort of the voice of reason and the voice of what's right and the voice that's not heard or ignored.
Yep. And a few more quick reactions. I think we could talk about this more after the second watch, but there's definitely a lot of orange present.
Yes.
Will was wearing an orange sweater in one scene, and the balcony in Hannibal's office comes into play again. And in this case, I thought, you know, there was something about this episode, even though it's about the interpersonal dynamics and the dialogue was in its way kind of subtle and realistic. Like if you don't really have to read between the lines, but there was this kind of way that people are subtly nudging each other in different directions without really overtly arguing. There were some things about the episode that were really not subtle that were kind of, I guess it's also the first episode that was sort of hitting you over the head with some things. So Abigail goes to visit Hannibal. She's up there on the loft and Hannibal says, okay, come down here. And she comes down this ladder where she is instantly surrounded by this bright red, bright orange wall of Hannibal's. And it's so clearly her descending into hell, where Hannibal is the devil and she's now in the fires of hell with Hannibal and collaborating with him there, that it doesn't bother me that it was so obvious, but the show did show a few of those moments in the episode. There were a couple of others, and maybe when we rewatch I'll try to remember one. Can you think of any others offhand? Do you know what I'm talking about this episode?
I do, but I did want to say something about that scene, because it does seem to me a very specific echo of the scene where Will is up on, you know, that little level, the higher level of the library. And we talked about how Hannibal sort of allows Will at least the illusion of dominance or the illusion of control. He does the opposite with Abigail. With Abigail, he takes a much more controlling stance, and I guess you can almost say a more paternal stance. But there's clearly parallels between Abigail and Will in that they're both sort of nascent killers, or they have the potential to be killers, or maybe Abigail is a killer and Will has not, you know, really killed other than in a justified way. There's parallels between them in that sense, and also in terms of their relationship with Hannibal, that Hannibal is going to be pushing both of them in a very specific direction, and the direction is to kill. So I think that was clearly very, very deliberate, and I think he can be more direct with Abigail because they have an acknowledgement between them of who the two of them are, whereas it's a slower process with Will, and it's more of a seduction with Will, whereas this is more of an overtly guiding role. It's much more parental. His relationship with Will is not parental.
Right. And I think part of it is Hannibal's just reading the individuals for how hard he can push them, because Abigail is in a really vulnerable position. She did just lose a father, and she lost a father who happened to be a serial killer. So Hannibal, I think, sees a really big opportunity, or has this opening to just come right in and be her father figure. He knows she needs a replacement. I think he can push it a little harder to just come in and fill that gap for her because she really needs it. Mm-hmm. I also think maybe it's partially her youth as well. Like, I think, you know, they had said already in the first episode that Will is a fragile teacup, and maybe Abigail is a little bit more wet clay. Like, Hannibal can take the risk of manipulating her a little more directly and a little more firmly because she's still unformed. Will is a little too established. He's an adult. He has these fragilities. He doesn't have as much of a clear thirst for violence that Abigail has, and the fascination for it that Abigail has. So if Hannibal pushes Will too hard, he's going to break and he's going to lose him. Whereas Hannibal can push Abigail a little bit harder, and she is going to just sort of take the shape that he's pushing her into.
I mean, there's stuff that is overt in this episode, as you point out. I mean, you have Will saying specifically, there's nothing uglier than killing. You know, that's just a pretty overt way of showing us Hannibal's reaction to that and showing us who Will wants to be in Abigail's eyes. Because I think Will is a lot less certain of the ugliness of killing than he would like to portray. So that's something that is done very straightforwardly, but I think it really works. Like, I really liked it. I loved Hannibal's Mads's facial reactions, his expressions, the way, just the kind of, not even a twitch in his face, but you can just see what's going on there, that it's almost hurtful to him. And it's also was very interesting, that scene, to me, because, I mean, I could really talk, and I guess we will, about his reactions in this episode, because the beginning when Will is...
Oh, my God.
It's so fantastic, and I guess, let's just talk about this one now, and then we can come back to it again.
When they go into the lecture?
Yes, and it is just so let's just say, Will is talking about the copycat killer, and he's talking about how smart the copycat killer is, and how he's elevated this killing to art, and the expression on Hannibal's face, it's so subtle. I mean, it's not like he breaks out in some kind of full-on smile, but you can just see he's basking in this. He's basking in Will's intelligence and insight, and he's basking in the unintended flattery that's coming his way from Will. And he does get just this ghost of a, I mean, you can see it before this even happens, but then he gets this ghost of a smile on his face. And you know he's just experiencing utter pleasure.
Yeah, it's like he's having an orgasm,
yes,
trying not to show it.
Yes.
And he just does it with the slightest twitch of his mouth and this softening of his eyes. It's such, and if you're not looking for it, you wouldn't see it if you were standing next to him. It's such a good performance.
It's really, really wonderful. And it's, you know, it's just another, you just think about the idea of falling in love, which is what Hannibal is doing. And I mean, I guess we'll talk, we haven't discussed this yet, but we'll talk later about the nature of that love. But it feels like that thing when you've fallen in love with somebody and you just sort of think, you know, how can there be more for me to like about this person? How can there be more for me to adore about this person? And then there is more. And just not the joy in realizing there's more, and there may be more after that, and there may be more after that. You know, it's just, you're watching someone falling more in love with somebody else. And it just happens in this incredibly brief, and there's barely a muscle moved. And you feel it, you see it. It's just fantastic. And then I guess we can talk about this later, but there's a lot of other reaction shots from Hannibal that are in response to things that Abigail is saying. You know, Abigail seems to, when Abigail seems to be catching on to the fact that he was the person on the phone, and how she sort of pushes that a little more and a little more, but that we should probably save for the next time. One thing I wanted to say about, you're talking about the colors though, mm-hmm, and I'm just going to throw this one in here, is that when Will and Hannibal come to visit Abigail, and when you watch this for the second time, they're wearing the same colors. They're in very different clothing, but they are wearing the exact same color palette. And it's like kind of blues and light browns, or like even like a light orangey brown kind of color. And they come in on Freddie, who's wearing this crazy leopard print outfit with gloves. And
yeah,
it's just very interesting because, you know, she's dressed in the pattern of an animal that's a predator, but she's so much more overt about it. She's so much more blatant about it. She's so much more straightforward about what she wants. She really lacks subtlety. Whereas yeah. Hannibal and even Will are coming in with agendas that have to do with Abigail, and they're in this very sort of muted palette. And I thought that was just a very interesting way to use color and costumes to demonstrate that.
Yeah, I think on rewatch, there's some things I remember about Freddy's, that outfit that Freddy's wearing, because it's such an unusual thing. The cut of the jacket, the way it flares out, the fact that she's wearing black gloves. There's a certain giallo murderer vibe to it with those black gloves. There's an almost Victorian female victim vibe to it, right? With the way that jacket flares out. I think I'm going to rewatch it and see, because I really almost thought she looked like a Victorian victim of Jack the Ripper when she walked in there, as well as being predatory, you know what I mean? Because it's such an odd cut, that jacket, and it's not something that a human wears
now
in the 21st century. So it was, I'm going to take a closer look at it when we do the second watch and see if anything else comes to mind.
Yeah, I have a lot of other thoughts too. I guess the one thing I would add about this is, again, we have so much happening here that is logistically impossible to have happened. I mean, yeah. There's just no physical way any of these things could have happened. And again, I think really on my initial watch, this is only episode 3. And I think these things were still kind of bothering me at this point. Like, how does Freddie Lowndes get into every crime scene? There's police all over the place. How does the brother get into the house when there's police all over the place? How does Hannibal get, it seems like a very short time period. How does he do the murder of the girl and plant her in the cabin and then get back to be traveling to the cabin with everybody?
It's like he's a superhero.
Yes, yes.
And also, you know, one thing I was thinking along those lines is, why is Jack Crawford, this FBI guy, the one who gets to decide whether Abigail gets to leave the hospital or not? It's totally not his call.
Yes.
Yet he's the authority who gets to decide. It makes no sense in the real world, but this is, on second watch, on the first watch, if you hadn't really figured out what the show was yet, it would bother you. On this watch, it doesn't bother me one bit.
Not in the least.
Because we understand now that what we're watching is more of a melodrama, right? Not a melodrama, but we're watching this thing, we're watching something where that kind of logic doesn't matter, and that it's the action and the interaction between the characters and the kind of dreamlike progression of the action that is what's so appealing about the show.
Yes.
And it doesn't need to be perfectly realistic in order for it to be incredibly enjoyable, just like a good old horror movie.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Okay, so I think we should rewatch, and we'll come back tomorrow and have some more thoughts about this.
All right.
One thing I wanted to talk about was where we left off yesterday, which has to do with all of Hannibal's reactions in this episode. And his reactions say a lot about what's going on and actually move things forward. So I guess we can start there. Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me. I think a lot of the things I wanted to talk about are sort of along those lines or relate to that. So in kind of the push and pull over which direction Abigail's going to go in. So I think that's a good place to start.
So I thought there was something very interesting in terms of the argument about whether to take Abigail home. And his expression when he's listening to the various arguments that are being posited is a very he's calculating. He's deciding which way to go and what's going to be best. And you just can see his brain is always working to figure out the right angle. He reacts when Abigail asks Will, when they are back home, how it feels when Will feels like Garrett Jacob Hobbs, when he sort of becomes Garrett Jacob Hobbs empathetically. And he really has, he's again just reacting both to what Will says and to what Abigail says. That Abigail then responds by saying, oh, I understand why you have bad nightmares. And he has a real reaction to that. And again, it's very, very subtle. I mean, during the same conversation, you have his reaction to her saying, to Abigail saying she'd never heard the caller who warned Garrett Jacob Hobbs, that she'd never heard his voice before. And you see Hannibal really react to that before.
There's another moment a little bit later when they're back in the house and she's kind of like, oh, are we going to reenact the crime? You be my mother, you be my father, and you be the voice on the phone. And she gives him like an extra long look. She really knows it's him.
Yes. And by the way, I think that's a very interesting scene aside from that, because she really is saying, you, Alana, be my mother, you will be my father, and you, Hannibal, be the person on the phone. And I think what she's saying is, you, Alana, be the victim, you will be the killer, and you, Hannibal, be exactly what you are, which is the person on the phone. So in drawing those parallels, you know, in saying what roles they should play, she's giving them the actual roles they will come to play.
Mm.
So I thought that was a very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
I think he has a facial reaction to the Marissa cursing at her mother.
Absolutely.
You know, he's Dorian. And I mean, this is something very interesting too, because Hannibal is a very precise, methodical killer in a lot of ways, but he's also very adaptable and his brain works really fast and he knows how to take advantage of a situation. And she's, you know, vulgar and rude. And so it makes it even easier, or not easier, because it's not hard for him to make someone a victim, but it makes her a victim not just of opportunity, but one he would relish killing.
Absolutely. I made the same note. It's over when she says to her mother, why do you have to be such a bitch? He just gets this smile on his face and you just know that she's just sealed her fate. Now, has his aversion to discourtesy or crudeness, has it really been plainly stated so yet in the series, or am I just taking what he says in Silence of the Lambs about discourtesy being intolerable to him and bringing it to the show? Because I'm attributing that as one of his motivations, or at least one of the things that's going to allow him to take pleasure in killing her, is that she's been so crass.
Well, I think he has made these comments. He's talked about Jack's suggestion that Abigail's an accomplice as being vulgar. He's right. Talked about Freddie Lowndes as being rude. He's looked at Franklin putting a dirty tissue down on the table with disgust. Right. So you do certainly have a sense that rudeness and vulgarity are anathema to him.
Right.
It's certainly not been explicitly stated that he kills people who are rude, but I don't think it's even yet been explicitly stated that he's killed anybody. I mean, we know he has, but it hasn't been explicitly stated. And then I just think one other interesting just facial reaction is when Abigail denies having been an accomplice to her father's murders. He has a real reaction to that. And I was just kind of wondering whether, does Hannibal absolutely know at this point that she was an accomplice? And I'm not sure from his expression whether he knows or he's guessing or he's just entertaining it as a possibility.
He's been watching for this, and the episode, when you go back and watch it again, the episode is, you know, it is about the struggle for partly which direction Will is going to go in and who's going to win him and win his fate or win the right to decide his fate. But it right now, it's much more directly about Abigail. And, you know, there's an early scene where Abigail's listening very intently when Alana says that she interviewed Abigail in the hospital. And when everyone asks her, okay, what was she like? And Alana says she was surprisingly practical. You know, she just wanted to talk about selling the house and she kind of just wanted to get out of there and just move on. And I think we're almost put in Hannibal's shoes there, listening to see whether she's a sociopath, right? Because Alana's really describing kind of a sociopathic reaction to this situation. Like she seems emotionally unaffected in a way.
Yes, like she says she demonstrates enough emotion to prove she has emotions.
Right.
Which is something sociopaths do. They ape emotion.
Yes, and I wonder if Alana is trying to be delicate and say she's a sociopath, but like she doesn't want to go that far yet to say that.
Yeah, I don't think Alana's made up her mind yet. I think Alana thinks there's much more to learn about her.
But when you observe Abigail as it moves along, she's really fascinated by Will's process. And when she gets into the house, she almost starts doing what Will does, right? She's like, is that where my blood was? And later she proposes directly reenacting the crime. Like she is almost more fascinated with the violence and the reconstruction of the crime than she is with the emotions of getting past whatever horrible thing has just happened to her. She seems more worried about whether she's going to go crazy or whether she's caught this disease of craziness or than really being sad about everything that's happened.
Yes. Just you mentioned her concern about whether she's caught craziness, and this is probably my favorite conversation in the whole episode, which is when Abigail asks, "Can you catch crazy?" And Alana describes what a folie à deux is and says it's two people sharing a delusion. Yeah. And Hannibal breaks in and says, it can't be delusional if the belief is accepted within a culture, a subculture, or a family. Mm-hmm. And of course, he wants his behavior and his beliefs to be accepted by a family, Will in particular, but also Abigail. They're going to sort of make this little family, and Hannibal really wants to share his beliefs and attitudes and philosophy and desires in a connected way with other people to make him feel like he's not alone. And I don't think Hannibal would ever think he was himself crazy, but he needs to find someone. This is part of his desire to find someone to connect with and to share his mindset with.
Right. And I think, in fact, he definitely wouldn't think he was, he definitely doesn't think he's crazy when she directly says, Ass says, you know, like my father, Hannibal says, I'm nothing like your father.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
I'm not this unhinged, sloppy person who doesn't understand his motivations.
Right, right. I have some questions, actually, that I wanted to ask.
Okay.
And see what you have to say about them. So the show opens with the flashback to Garrett Jacob Hobbs taking Abigail hunting and her killing the stag, a deer, and likening deer to humans, and the conversation about, you know, honoring by eating every part, using every part of the thing that you killed or the being that you killed, and otherwise it's just murder. And Abigail seems to be demonstrating a lot of reluctance or hesitancy about the killing, and seems to really be doing it for paternal approval, which I guess is something Hannibal really will tap into later. But do you think she actually is reluctant? Do you think she is torn about killing? Like, does she really need, she does really still need to be coaxed along, or is she kind of close to being there already?
That's a really good question. I think the answer might be that she's struggling with her own enjoyment of killing, because that's what she's saying for the rest of the episode, right? You know, she seems very afraid that she has this violence in her, that she has this relish for killing. She's trying very hard throughout the episode to deny it. She's afraid, am I going to be sick like my father? She's scared of this impulse of hers. So maybe what's happening in that first scene is that may be what's going on. She may be struggling not so much with the act of killing, but with the fear of enjoying it too much. And maybe this that little speech she gives about how deer care about their environment and they have intelligence and they have emotions, that could be more related to what Alana was observing, which is that she is going through the motions of expressing emotion, but she may just be testing it out to see if it fits, but she may not really feel it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And also another parallel to Will, right? Somebody who is just sort of trying to deny. I mean, Will's not a sociopath, but certainly someone trying to suppress, or someone who's fearful of his own dark impulses.
And, you know, when he threatens Freddie Lowndes, he says to her, don't threaten someone who thinks about killing other people for a living. And I think he thinks, he doesn't know how bad that sounds. Like, he thinks he's expressing kind of in a humorous way, I have this detached view of killing, I contemplate what it's all about, but it certainly sounds like a threat, and I don't think he even realizes that he may mean it as a threat. I think he means it as a joke, but he means it as a threat in a way that he can't yet acknowledge, right?
Yes, yes. That is also leads to something interesting, which is, you know, they cut right away to Jack reading that line out of the Freddie Lowndes article.
Yeah, I love it. It's a good cut.
And it's another opportunity for Hannibal to take Will's side against Jack. You know, Jack says, why didn't you stop him, basically? And Hannibal says, I trust Will to speak for himself. And he's empowering Will and, you know, drawing Will closer to him in terms of who is going to be guiding him and who is going to be mentoring him and who's going to be shaping him.
Right. And this is one of those moments where Jack is right, but Hannibal sounds so reasonable in his response, even though his response is, you know, really pushing Will in the wrong direction and it's for insidious purposes. It sounds perfectly reasonable. He's really good at saying things that sound perfectly reasonable without admitting his intentions, but steering things in the right direction for him. Like, there was another good example of that. I really like it. I really like the sociopathic conversation he has with Abigail at the very end when she's like, so do you not regret that It was something along the lines of, do you not regret that Will killed my father, or that my father, and he says something like, well, what was the alternative? Right?
I think she says, you're glad I killed the brother.
Sorry, you're right. I mixed it up, and maybe there's a reason why I mixed it up, because it's a similar kind of thing. But yeah, are you
because glad? He is glad about both of them. He's glad about both of those things.
He is glad, but he doesn't answer it like he, you know, his answer is, well, what was the alternative? It's not whether it's sad. It's not whether it's regrettable. He just says, he basically finds a way to say, how could I regret this person's death? I prefer him to be dead over you, right? And
yes, and there's a real normalizing of murder as a solution to a problem. It's interesting too, because we've talked about how Abigail is further along the path of really being a murderer than Will is. And when you look at these two killings, the killing of Garrick Jacob Hobbs and the killing of the copycat victim's brother, you know, Hannibal had to create a scenario that would lead to Will having to kill Garrick Jacob Hobbs. He didn't have to create this scenario for Abigail. Abigail found herself in a situation, but it wasn't a manufactured situation. It wasn't something Hannibal manufactured to push her into killing. She's further along that road. She's ready to do it herself.
Yes. There was something I wanted to ask you about with that, and the readiness, or how readily she kills. Hannibal didn't have to manipulate her into reacting that way in that situation. But is he manipulating her by saying that basically you gutted him like a deer? Because I was watching, and when we had our first conversation about this, when I was doing the recap, I said she really guts him. You actually don't see her gut him. You see her stab him, and there is a shot of her kind of jerking her body, which implies that maybe she gives him an extra cut. But she doesn't, you don't really see her gut him like a deer. Hannibal comes right in and says, oh my God, you butchered him. You know, no one's going to believe this was self-defense. Or how's anyone, you know, there's going to be a lot of doubt about this because you butchered him. And I wondered if that was deliberate, if we're actually not supposed to see her actually do it. We're not really supposed to see the severity of the injury she inflicts on him. And instead, we sort of are put in her position of believing Hannibal, that she gutted the guy like a deer sadistically and with relish, when actually she just sort of stabbed him self-defense.
I this could be a false memory, but I have a memory of seeing a long cut in the body. And it may be afterwards when Hannibal goes and looks at the body. That could be just I could be misremembering that. I think whether or not she overkilled or used too much force, he's still manipulating her, and he's choosing his language very deliberately, and like by using the term gutting. So whether or not she actually did that, even if she actually did do it, he's emphasizing it. He's exaggerating it. He's making her feel that that's what she is. You know, any question she had about whether this was self-defense or not, and there is a question about whether it is self-defense, he is resolving for her. And she questions herself later, like it works, because later when she comes to his office, she says, I didn't know whether he was going to kill me. So, which would make it not self-defense necessarily. So I think what Hannibal has done in manipulating her and also in tying her to him has been very effective.
Right. Oh yeah. No, I mean, he's done a brilliant job of it. It is kind of cool how, Just again, what a well-written episode it is, that she comes, that it sort of declares at the outset, this is going to be a struggle over who gets to decide what happens to Abigail. And by the end of the episode, there's about a million twists and turns on the way, but it all bends in the direction that Hannibal is bending it. And by the end of the episode, they're basically accomplices in serial killing. And it's a really good, it doesn't feel like it bends so far, but it actually goes from her being sort of, it's almost like a jump ball for the whole team, right? Like who's gonna get to decide what direction she goes in. And at the end, Hannibal has captured her. And
yes.
Yes,
which I think the last line he says to her, the last line of the episode is no more climbing the walls, right? No more climbing walls. Like he's like, you're staying put. I have you.
Now, I think Will is in this episode. I think he's really struggling because I think he has a sense that this is going on, even though he's not consciously acknowledging it. He has this dream where he takes Garrett Jacob Hobbs's place and cuts her throat. And there's a parallel with when Garrett Jacob Hobbs is teaching Abigail how to hunt. There's, you know, he whispers something in her ear. You can't really hear it. Like he says something about like steady your hand or something like that, but it's the sound of his dialogue is really kind of very hard to make out. And then in the dream where Will cuts her throat, his dialogue is really hard to make out, but I put on closed captioning and just was wondering what he was saying to her. And he says something to the effect of, I'm sorry, this will all stop. I'm going to make it go away. And you can interpret that as him wanting to make the pain go away for Abigail. But a little later in the episode, I think almost immediately, Abigail's in a conversation where she says, you know, if my father had killed me, would all those other girls be alive? And I think Will has a sense that if Abigail were to die, it would change, that it would save a lot of lives, that things are going to go off the rails if Abigail remains alive. And he has a sense of that. And he feels like she really should be stopped. It would be better if she was dead, not just because all those other girls would still be alive, but because whatever's about to happen, because Hannibal's got a hold of her, is not going to be good. And I think Will kind of, this dream of Will's is him subconsciously realizing that, I think.
Well, that's very interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, Garrett Jacob Hobbs, Abigail says, I think it's in the last episode, that her father did, or when she wakes up, it must be in this episode, that is what her father said to her. I think she tells that to Will. So it's in Will's mind. But certainly it can take on a deeper meaning or a more multi-layered meaning in his, you know, dream logic. Also, of course, you see the stag in his dream.
And the stag dies when he cuts her throat.
Yes, yes. So he's sort of, in the dream, he's causing the death of two killers. I just wanted to say one thing about that dream. You know, it's not the first time. I think in the first episode, we also see Will having nightmares and waking up drenched in sweat. And I certainly think on the first viewing, you just look at this and say, oh, he's having horrible nightmares that are causing him to sweat. But also, this seems to be setting up his encephalitis, that he's probably having fevers already, right? Like he has encephalitis now, right?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot that happens later in the show, but yeah, that must be what's going on there.
I think he's starting to have brain fever.
Right. Right. So there was one other thing that I wanted to bring up, just an observation about my own reaction to the episode and something I said when we did the recap, which was, you know, I had said to you that we both said that Alana really hasn't come into her own as a differentiated character yet. And I had mentioned that in one of the scenes where she's having an argument about what to do about Abigail and whether Will should talk to her and all that, like basically she gets ignored, right? And like everyone overrules her. And I thought it was just a really good example of gender dynamics in the professional setting, right? Of just a woman just, you know, being told that what she thinks isn't important. But what I didn't realize is a lot of plays a really important role. The first two scenes belong completely to her. She goes to see Will and has a conversation with him, and she goes to see Abigail and has a long conversation with her. And I feel like my own, like I was paying so much attention to how she was being ignored by the other men in the room that I actually just forgot that she, the first, you know, 7 minutes of the show are all her and her independent relationship with Abigail. And I don't know if it's because she's not well developed yet, or I don't know if it's because the show is sort of dismissing her opinion, and therefore I was sort of less aware of the fact that so many minutes of the show belong to her. But like, she is treated as an independent character with her own ability to have conversations with other characters without Will or Hannibal or Jack in the room. So making that observation about myself.
I agree. She is, and she is expressing opinions, but she is like walking around and functioning as an independent character. I just feel like we know nothing about this character other than she's there to do the right thing, to try to do the right thing, to sort of have the wool pulled over her eyes by Hannibal and to be a victim in this episode. I mean, he does knock her unconscious. I mean, it's sort of fulfilling the sort of family model that Abigail proposes, right? She does become a victim in this episode, and she'll become much more of a victim. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. I may have bias too. I may have my own bias about, you know, her as a female character, but I don't feel the same knowledge of her, even that I have of Jack at this point. I think we've just learned more about Jack. We've learned more about, certainly seen more of Hannibal. We know more about Will. And I, at this point, you know, at least with Jack, you've even gotten a little bit of his backstory when he's talking to Hannibal at dinner. There's sort of a nothing there with Alana, other than she's a teacher, she was Hannibal's student. He thinks Hannibal values her brain, but, you know, nobody's brain is as good as his. So I don't know. Let's keep watching her and see how she gets used by the creators in the next coming episodes.
All right.
Can I just ask you one thing? There is one more thing I wanted to talk about, and this is more of a style or visual thing. But we had discussed, I had brought up to you the fact that when Will and Hannibal come to see Abigail for the first time, they're dressed in the same colors. I don't know if you noticed it, but they're wearing like sort of both wearing blue and sort of an orangey brown or rust color. And I just sort of see this as Will is kind of already imprinting on Hannibal, right? That he's sort of picking up things to emulate in Hannibal. But then I also noticed in the next several scenes, Hannibal is wearing a sweater under his suit.
His casual look.
And Will had been wearing a sweater under his jacket. And I just felt like, look, it could just be it was very cold when they were shooting and he needed to wear a sweater. But I just feel they're more careful than that. And I really felt like there was a little bit of reciprocity in terms of how they're sort of attaching and imprinting on each other, that Will picked up a stylistic cue from Hannibal and Hannibal's picking up a stylistic cue from Will.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, it is a very, I mean, I'm glad you brought it up because I did notice that Hannibal's wearing that zippy
twice. Two different ones. One is one color and one's red, and I can't remember what the other one is. Blue, I think.
Yeah, yes. So that's definitely why, for sure. Yeah, was there, you know, there's other examples in the episode of people being dressed similarly, like when Abigail's friend shows up, she's dressed really similarly to Abigail. Alana's actually kind of dressed in similar colors, and the one who doesn't dress like anyone else is Freddie. I mean, I was looking at her, that getup she wears to the hospital again. You know, my initial impression when we talked last time was that she sort of looked like a Victorian woman. Like, she just has, she has this short crop jacket that, like, flares out, and gloves, and I still felt like she looked like that. She just looked like someone from another era, and I couldn't help but think she looks sort of like a victim of Jack the Ripper, and those gloves she's wearing are just—it's just so strange, you know. And she's dressed like a criminal, but she's also dressed like a victim, and in just a way that even in this show, the way she's dressed stands out as really, really strange.
Yes, and also it is—I mean, it's bizarre. Her clothes are bizarre. Her clothes when she's later snuck into the house. Is bizarre also. She's wearing a very strange outfit with like this short jacket with like a peplum and these like sort of lacy leggings. It's very, her outfits are very bizarre. One thing we should also point out is that Freddie drives a lot of what happens in this episode.
Totally.
Particularly with respect to the brother, you know, dropping the information to the brother that Abigail's woken up and sort of pushing him to do something. That just doesn't happen without Freddie. None of this happens without Freddie. Like, Freddie set something in motion. She's intending to set something in motion. I don't think she's intending to set this specific thing in motion, but certainly she knows that this guy is a little bit distraught and off and angry. And she seems to be hoping for a confrontation that could be a very dangerous one so she can create news.
Yeah, she's a bit of a chaos. She likes chaos. She's a chaos agent, I guess. I don't think she plans. She's not as methodical as Hannibal is in sort of figuring out all the different directions something can go in and adapting. But she does take pleasure in just stirring things up and sort of mixing all these volatile elements together and seeing what kind of reaction she gets. I think that's more what she's concerned about or more what she enjoys. But I don't think she also just doesn't realize how dangerous a game she's playing, because I think she can't conceive of how, like, truly awful Hannibal is or where this could go. But
There is a funny thing when she is trying to kind of do a quid pro quo with Will, you know, after they've come out from visiting Abigail, where she's really saying like, well, I can undo the damage I've done in terms of how she views you if you help me. And Hannibal has, I mean, it is actually another one of these great reaction shots where you watch Hannibal watching someone trying to be manipulative.
Right, right.
And he almost looks amused by it because he can see exactly what she's doing, but it's, to him, it's amateurish.
Yep. Although he does, I think, borrow from her later, because one of the things that she's saying to Abigail, and it doesn't really work with Abigail, but it works with a lot of other people, and she's trying to say is, listen, side with me, and I'll make sure that your reputation and your image and how other people feel about you comes out the right way. And that, like, for posterity and for your future happiness, that's the most important thing, is what people are going to say about you now. She tries it with Will, and Will doesn't really care. And you actually see how little anyone, like Jack Crawford's a little pissed at Will for threatening her, but not really. He just kind of makes a joke out of it and is more annoyed with Hannibal than with Will. But later in the episode, though, Hannibal does say to Abigail something to the effect of, you know, whether people are going to believe you or not, that it was self-defense, and sort of borrows a little bit of that, I think, from Freddie, and just also says to Abigail, look, you know, here, you got to protect yourself here, right? And I'm in the best position to help you protect yourself, because I'm going to make sure no one finds out about this, and that, you know, no one ever thinks you're crazy.
So another good episode.
Yep, another good episode. And we'll reconvene for episode 4.
Okay.